agents of allies allowing alliterations about alligators. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 214, our last episode of the season. And of course, I'm your humble host, Karen. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day, everybody. And these people are your trio of trivia tricksters who treasure tri-tip and triskaidekaphobia.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Those were some great ones, Karen. Both of them I really liked, yeah.
Well, it's the season finale. We've got to bring out the good stuff.
It is our last episode of this current season, our experiment season. But first things first, we had a listener challenge last week.
If
you didn't listen to the end of episode 213, you know, go on and have a quick listen and see if you can figure it out before I spoil it here with the answer. So what I did is I played five songs. You were tasked with the mission of finding out what the theme is that ties all these songs together because they have something very, very, very specific in common. And just for reference here, I'm going to play a very quick edit of the five songs really quickly.
I was cruising with my favorite gang.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try.
So I actually asked the listeners to tell us the answer via memes and GIFs.
I really enjoyed looking through the Twitter feed.
You have all spoken. A lot of people got it. It's in line with our TV theme last episode. And the answer is none other than Fresh Prince himself, Willard Smith. Mr. Willard, Will Smith. All these songs are direct main samples used in five of Will Smith's biggest charting songs.
Oh.
We got Getting Jiggy With It, Wild Wild West, Men in Black, Miami, and Just the Two of Us. I've been saving this quiz for so long.
This is such a Karen quiz.
Ever since I was in a car on the radio, it played Forget Me Not. Mm-hmm. And I go, wait a minute, this song is not Men in Black?
Karen, I just realized Forget Me Not. It's funny that that song's Forget Me Not because such a big theme of Men in Black is making people forget.
Oh, Dana. Even within the quiz, like for Will Smith, of these five biggest hits, a couple of them were in movies that he was also in, you know?
That was the formula.
He was the biggest movie star for so long.
Remember the summer, big summer hit movie and hit song.
Yep.
Anyways, thanks to all who have spammed us with a very well-curated Will Smith gifts. Without further ado, let's jump into our first general trivia segment, Pop Quiz, Hot Shot. So today we have something different.
Oh, geez.
Instead of our usual Trivial Pursuit card, I have a Pop Quiz challenge. Get out your pen and paper.
Oh, no.
A real pop quiz. As we're recording this, the Olympic trials are happening. I'm pretty sure we got asked this question at least four times in pub trivia. And so I'm going to ask you guys your pen and paper.
Did we ever get it?
I don't think so.
Oh, man.
Those are the worst. The ones that come up and we all look at each other and we're like, oh, man, we had this one before. And we're like, did we get it right? And we're like, I don't think so.
Pens and paper out. I need you guys to list me what are the 10 events in a decathlon.
Modern decathlon.
Okay.
Modern,
can we work together?
No, there's 10. There's 10. I will be very generous with my point giving.
Okay.
If we need some more guidance, I found out that it's a good mnemonic is 4-3-3.
Okay.
Four running like activities.
That is helpful.
Three jumping like activities and three throwing things.
That is very,
activity.
In fact, okay. Very helpful.
Okay.
All right. I was doing terribly because I had biking and swimming on my list. So I'm taking those off.
And as reference, I am using what is listed now as the current decathlon events on Wikipedia. 433. It's a good mnemonic going forward. 4 running, 3 jumping, 3 throwing.
This is a good one. This is a good one to know because like this is easily shows up like, you know, 1 point for each kind of thing. Odds are pretty good. You're going to be able to know or guess at least 1 or 2, but
I think a average person probably knows at least 5. Okay. No?
The one where my confidence is really shaky in the running ones because it's like I'm remembering all the distances and stuff.
It's pretty standard. Right. Everybody keep your own score, count the ones you got right, and we'll share with the class.
All right.
For running, we have the shortest 100 meters, then 400 meters, then 1500 meters, and then the fourth running event is 100 meter hurdle.
Okay. I've kind of put that under jumping.
I put that under jumping that too. Yeah. But we'll see what jumping is.
Okay. The 3 jumping. We got long jump. We got high jump. And we got pole vault.
Yeah, all right.
Which That's is kind of like called. Jumping.
I mean, it's elevating.
All right, and the 3 throwing, we got shot put, we got discus, we got javelin.
Ooh.
I put the hammer toss instead of the discus. I
got down javelin, discus, shot put, and I'm like, oh, but there's hammer toss hammer. Too.
What if you say ball throw?
I'm gonna give you shot put for that.
Okay, perfect. Half point.
So I'm gonna say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I got 7 points.
That's great.
Fun fact, there's men's and women's is different. Decathlon. And the only thing that's different is the hurdle.
Huh.
Men's is 110 meter hurdle. Women's is 100 meter hurdle.
Okay.
They just had to have the men's have more. So
I don't know why, but I'll accept, you know, 100-ish meters hurdle or even just hurdle.
I did really poorly in the running ones. I did get the 100 meter. I had, 200, 500, 10,000. So not close, even though those might be distances in other events. So I got 1 in the running. I got all 3 of the jumping, and then I got javelin and shot put. So it looks like I got 6.
I also got 6. Because we're being generous with the wording.
Right.
You know, I believe you that we've been asked 4 times and we've never gotten multiple. I really believe totally you. Believe
I think it's like, we're like, is marathon part of it? Is a you know, half that, marathon?
That went through my mind, but I feel like I remember when they added marathon and I feel like it was relatively, I don't know, like in my lifetime anyway. So
I think if it helps us wrong, to remember that all of these things can be done in one area, like in a track and field place, right? And so the running's not going to be like around the city for 26 miles. You know, the running is as far as 4 laps around the track, you know, about, which is 1,500 meters.
So I won. So I got 7 points. What is my prize?
Do you win a cameo?
It's season 2. I'm expecting the big money prizes now.
Oh, I bet we could get a track star cameo.
Dude, no. Now she's really going to do it.
That'd be cool.
Hey, Chris. It's me, Usain Bolt. I heard that you know
a few
70%
of
the events in decathlon. The line first in the hot quiz.
You were slightly better.
Well, okay job, everybody. Something to... Hopefully, maybe I'll revisit this question in 4 years for Olympics and see how we do that.
The important thing is not that any one of us can get all 10. It's that together we can get all 10. That's what we need to focus on.
Well, I know all 10 now.
Yeah. Okay. You can be the one who does this question.
All right.
Just be like Karen.
Sheet to Karen.
Woo! We have a surprise shout out to Mr. Justin D. from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Justin.
Hi, Justin.
Hi, Justin.
We heard you are a dedicated, this is starting to sound like a cameo. We heard you are a dedicated professional, an incredible father, and your partner, Julianne, wrote in and she described you as her best friend and partner for over 20 years. I heard your son, who's almost 9, is also a huge fan of Good Job Brain. And if my math is right, he's technically younger than this actual podcast, believe it or not. So we thank you, you guys. We thank you. Fans like you and families like yours for listening to us, for supporting us, and for being patient, and for, you know, to be honest, for welcoming us back after our long hiatus. This season has been a really great homecoming for all of us. So as our last episode of the season, we thought homecoming, home is a great topic. So this week, there's no place like home.
Well, hot and heavy pumpkin pie, chocolate candy tastes so nice. There ain't nothing please me more than you. Oh, home, let me come home. Home is wherever I'm with you. Oh, home, let me come home. Home is wherever I'm with you.
I have a quiz for you all called House and Home, and it is all about our houses, the things that go into making them look good, things that we trick them out with to make our lives easier.
Chip and Joanna, come help me. I've watched so many HGTV shows. I'm ready for this quiz.
Okay.
Shiplap all over your house.
Shiplap. What? Farmhouse oh my chic. Goodness. This is a family show. let's do this as a buzzer quiz here. Let's get out your barnyard buzzers. Here we go. If you are having some remodeling done on your house, for example, and you need to hire a glazier, what part of your house will that person be working on? Let's say, Dana.
Like windows or glass in your house?
Yeah, that's right. Your windows, your glass, the glazier, glassier, if you want to go back to the original
root. Oh, how do you spell
it?
With a Z or two
we
S's?
We spell it with a Z, glazier. Yeah, G-L-A-Z-I-E-R. But, I mean, etymologically, it really is just glass person, glassy.
Oh, that
glass,
where the last name, glazier, glassier.
Yeah, that's
from?
Right. It's an occupational last name. That's right. Mm-hmm. Glazier, another variation as well.
Glasser. Mm-hmm. Oh!
That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So many of these occupational names. And no surprise, glass has been around. Windows have been around for quite a while. What has not been around for quite that long, however, are some of our modern conveniences. In 1926, during the Calvin Coolidge presidency, the White House first received what fixture of a modern day household? Karen.
Oh, maybe it's wrong. My gut wanted to say air conditioning.
That's not a terrible guess. It's Chris.
Flush toilet.
Not a bad guess, but no, in fact, plumbing goes back even earlier than you might think in the White House. Dana, what is your guess?
Is it the refrigerator?
It is the refrigerator. Oh, yes. Okay. 1926, the first electric refrigerator, I should say. They would have had ice boxes and things like that. The White House actually was wired for electricity in 1891 during the presidency of Benjamin Harrison. I read, again, this is according to the Department of Energy, I read that both President and Mrs. Harrison were so afraid of being electrocuted, they never touched any of the light switches. I wonder how many refrigerators there are in the White House now. My grandma had like 3 just at her house, so there's probably...
When Trump was there, he had that Diet Coke refrigerator in his office.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah.
It's like just for Diet Coke.
Dream.
Yeah.
Something the White House certainly needs today is probably a whole team dedicated to HVAC. What does HVAC stand for? Chris.
Heating, ventilation, and air conditioning.
That is correct. Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Any modern build today, a residential office, you're going to need an HVAC person or team to come in and handle one or all 3 of your heating, your ventilation, and your air conditioning.
Oh, A is and.
Yeah.
No,
no,
air
it's
conditioning.
AC. Air conditioning.
Oh,
air.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, oh.
Yeah. In 1954, the Alliance Manufacturing Company debuted the Genie, a quintessentially American product so successful, the company eventually changed its name to the Genie Company. What is the Genie?
No.
Chris.
I'm going to say it's the electric vacuum.
Ooh, not a bad guess. It is something involving electricity.
Oh, it's not
very
that, huh?
American need.
Oh, very
here.
American. Yeah.
Very American.
I mean, you find them all over the world.
What
now.
Year was it now?
1954.
Very American. Well, so I was going to guess, like, I don't know if they still make these, but...
Oh, they still make it. Not only do they still make it, they are one of the top two brands of this particular item today. Let me give you a little clue here, maybe. Oh. The other top brand is the Liftmaster.
Why does that sound familiar?
Why does that sound familiar?
Why does Liftmaster...
If you have ever been in a suburban American home, there's a very good chance you have seen, used, heard one of these. Dana... Hi.
A garage door?
It is the remote-controlled electric garage door opener.
As in Open Sesame.
Yeah. Yes, as the in Genie. Open Sesame, yeah. The Genie.
That's a good
press,
one.
And you don't need to get out of your car like a sucker. You just press a button and it opens and you drive in.
That's
yeah.
so smart.
This is one of those inventions. I looked it up. This is one of those. I love when things like this happen. It was invented independently in 1931. Two American inventors, totally different cities, both came up with designs for radio-controlled electric garage
door
openers.
How did it work before? Was it just like a big door that you swing out?
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, either doors that you swing out, you know, kind of split
like a barn door
down the middle, or the lift kind of up and over, which you still see. I mean, you know.
It's like the little lock in the handle on the old houses.
Oh.
Yeah.
And it would be one solid piece of wood, and it would, you know, you'd sort of pull it out and then, you know, slide it in.
That's what my house has, and you really, it's a load. That thing, and you got to be careful not to clip somebody in the chin if they're standing on the other side. Yeah. Ugh. I grew up in Los Angeles, as you guys know, and my house, like a lot of houses down south, had terracotta floor tiles. Very popular, very common, that nice, rich, reddish color. We get the term terracotta from Italian. What does the term terracotta literally mean? Two words, terracotta.
Earth. Land. Mm-hmm. Cottage.
What's a cotta?
How would you go about
oven?
Okay. Yeah, oh, Dana's on the right track. Terracotta. Terracotta. Chris has a guess.
Baked earth.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's what I said.
Cooked earth. Okay, last one. From 1908 to 1940, this company sold more than 70,000 homes with such colorful names as the Hathaway, the Avondale, and the Magnolia.
I have no idea.
Chris.
Sears Roebuck.
It is the Sears Roebuck Company.
They sold houses.
This is the buy a house out of the catalog and we will send you all the parts to make a house.
That is right. which I believe Chris discussed at one point on the show prior.
Oh,
and
my God.
I did some research. I was blown away by the scale of this kit home program and also the quality of these homes. These homes were... especially if you bought the really nicest ones, they were outrageously high quality. I mean, many, if not most of them, are still standing today. Many of them are on historic, you know, landmark registers. They were really solidly built. They would ship out, I mean, by rail, you know, and not to recap Chris's whole segment, but they would ship out giant boxes, tons of materials by rail, truck it to the site, and... Basically, if you knew what you were doing and knew like to follow instructions, you could do it yourself. A lot of people would hire a professional to come do it for them.
Yeah.
Eventually, Sears started, you know.
Yeah, I mean, which people do today with IKEA furniture, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's really incredible. I learned that at one point in the Sears Roebuck company history, they lost all of their master records to this program in a fire. So they don't know exactly how many were sold and where everyone who had one is. So now there's this kind of cool, not guessing game, but you can kind of sort of sleuth and see like, oh, do I have a Sears home, you know, and look into it. There are clusters of them all around the country. Most of them are in Illinois, Ohio. There's a cluster in Washington, D.C., but... There, and you know, people who have them and know that they have them tend to be very proud of it. And
what's the incentive? Is it price? Like, are they cheaper?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I mean, it was, look, they weren't cheap. I ran some of the inflation calculators on what it cost to buy one of these things. And, you know, you could still spend up to equivalent of $80,000, you know, thereabouts, to buy one of these things and have it shipped out to you. So if you live in a Sears home, ooh, dear listener, if you're in a Sears modern home, was the home line, I would love to hear about it. Yeah, there's some things you can look for, in fact, if you're not sure. Like, you can look for, like, certain shipping labels, like, on the back of some of, like, the lumber.
This like, will be just like a, Chris, you know, talking about his video games. Yeah. Look at these details, and you can tell that this was made.
Yeah. It's right. Some of the bathtubs I get, if you still have the original bathtub, if you have a Sears modern home from the 1930s, some of them have a little SR logo kind of cast into the bathtub that you can sort of look for that.
Whoa, as a little, like, that's cool.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty neat.
Cool. All right, everybody. It's not good job brain if we don't talk about some weird animals. So here I have a very quick animal home name quiz. Some of them are really cool words, and I've written them in a quiz that hopefully will clue you in on the word. Here we go. Use your barnyard buzzers and buzz in for this animal home quiz. A bee lives in a hive. Where does a wasp live in? Chris.
The nest.
No.
No.
I've only ever heard wasp nest.
But the expression, like, expression, Karen.
There's a special term for a bee is to a hive, a wasp is to a
jive.
The term is vespiary.
Oh.
We have an apiary for bees. Vespiary. As we know, Colin drives a Vespa. Vespa is named for wasp vespiary.
That's a fun word to say.
I know. Yeah. That's a really fancy name for something that whenever you see it, you're like, oh no.
Disgusting.
Get rid
of that.
Yeah.
Oh, one of my favorite things to do online is there's a guy, I think in Tennessee, he does bee removal. I'm sure it's like a regional problem for that area where bees will just start making hives, like coming into the houses, into the walls and stuff. And so they need like this bee removal guy to safely do some surgery on the house and protect the bees. It's wild. It's borders between like awe and disgust. Here we go. Next question. Clothing company American Eagle named their official offshoot lounge and underwear brand this, fittingly.
Huh.
Clothing company American Eagle. Chris?
Irie?
Yes, it is. Is it Irie? Feeling Irie?
I think it's Irie.
Not Aerie. Mm-hmm. I always pronounce it Aerie.
It's like from Game of Thrones?
Yes. The eagle nest or any scary predator bird nest is usually called that as well.
Yeah. I did not get that reference from Game of Thrones. The dozens and dozens of times that they said it, I did not realize
it. Because it's so tall.
Yeah, I just assumed it was an in-universe word. Well, that's great.
Oh. So, some squirrels, I don't know if you guys know this. I didn't know this until I read this. Some squirrels build nests using twigs and leaves, like high up in trees. And the name for these squirrel homes or nests is not to be confused with the richest man in hip hop.
Richest man in hip hop.
Kanye's.
Incorrect. Colin.
Hova's.
That's a good one. That sounds like a house name.
Squirrel nests are called Dre's. Dre's, Dr. Dre. Spelled differently, Drey is the name of our squirrel nest.
Squirrel nest, Dre.
Dr. Dre made billions in his Beats by Dre acquisition by Apple, launching him to becoming probably the richest man in hip hop. All right, next question. The nest of our Good Job Brain mascot animal, the beaver, is often called a dam, but it actually has this handsome name as the name for its nest, reminiscent of a cabin in a ski resort. Colin.
Is it a lodge?
It is a lodge.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't call it dams. They live in lodges.
I thought you were going to say chalet or something. I really did.
Yeah.
Beavers it makes in their you think chalets. Of like, they're French Canadian.
Like a little beret on.
Yeah. Other names for animal homes that did not make it into this quiz include a badger's nest is called a set. Huh. S-E-T or S-E-T-T. A pheasant, a home for pheasants is called a nide. N-I-D-E.
Oh.
A nide. Hmm. All right. Good job, everybody.
Yay.
So I have an announcement. We started a charity fund officially called Good Job, comma, Brain, exclamation point, charity fund. I fought for that exclamation. So I used a chunk of my game show winnings to seed this charity fund so we can give grants to groups and organizations that we think embody the spirit of Good Job, Brain for years to come. And we just finalized our first batch of grant recipients. So one of our recipients is the Crucible in Oakland, which is a industrial arts workshop and facility. Mm. And they teach classes with fire, with metal, ceramics, glass. It's so cool. And they also have an award-winning youth program that have scholarship for kids to learn some of these cool industrial arts. And then Chris, we have another grant recipient.
Yes, this is a nonprofit that I've done some volunteer work with, very near and dear to my heart. It's called the Video Game History Foundation. It is actually here in the Bay Area also. They're doing a whole bunch of stuff, building a library of video game periodicals, which is very, very important because magazines get thrown away. You know, so much of the history is in those magazines. They have to be kept in good condition and also, you know, made available for researchers, reaching out to game developers, trying to find source code, trying to find games that might be sitting on floppy disks that might be sitting next to an electromagnet and need to be rescued. And, you know, before they, you know, doing the, you know, just everything from interviewing video game developers while they're still alive to saving the games and saving magazines, saving everything so that historians now and far into the future are going to be able to have the materials that they need to tell the story of the history of video games properly.
So the charity I picked is also one that I volunteered with. It's called Black Girls Code. It is to encourage black girls, them to become more confident in STEM, like to give them experiences coding or programming. I helped with a website design class with them, and that was really fun. And then I also did a talk about getting into the video games industry, and that was really fun. You know, I'll be honest, it is lonely in tech to be a black woman. So I do want more
well, black especially women. Like at a young age too, I'm sure it feels so nice to see role models, but also to see like peers of the same age group into the stuff that you're into too.
And people are real excited when you're really excited too. It's so fun. Yeah, so it's a great organization. I'm so proud that we got to donate some money to them.
Woo! So yes, so those are our first grant recipients. Thank you. If you want to recommend or suggest a nonprofit group, you can actually do that on our site.
And the goal definitely like to highlight maybe some smaller organizations or groups that, you know, might not get the attention otherwise. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm researching on some beaver conservation society.
We need to upgrade those lodges to chalets if it's the last thing Karen does. I want to see every beaver in this country with a chalet.
We gave this beaver $1,000, which he shredded and used to build a new shell.
It just made its lodge a little greener.
All right, Chris, and I heard you have a word quiz for us.
I do, Karen, and I have to apologize to you because this quiz is about English language idioms.
Oh, my God.
Figurative, metaphorical phrases used in the English language.
I'm going to eat a sandwich.
I know. We'll see you. We'll send somebody to get you when it's over. No, maybe you'll get
so you literally you know. Have a sandwich.
She really does have a
turkey sandwich.
Ready to go.
Not even joking around. No. I mean, Karen, you might get some of these. Come on. I'm gonna tell you the literal meaning of some metaphorical idiomatic English phrases, and you will tell me what idiom I am referencing. Now, of course, as a solving aid and to theme it to this episode, each one of these phrases has the word home in it. For example, no points, if I were to say to earn the money for the household, you might say
Bring home the bacon.
There we go.
It's not bread.
Oh, you're thinking of breadwinner? Are you thinking of breadwinner?
Yeah. Breadwinner also, but also bring home the bacon. Yeah, not bring
home
the bread.
Off to a good start here. Off to a great start already, Chris.
Okay. Well, she has a sandwich. She's fine.
Carrie's got her sandwich. That's why she's thinking of bread, though. All right. Well, here we go. Question number one. Get your barnyard buzzers ready. Rural, small town, simple, unpretentious, earthy. Colin?
Is it down home?
Down home. I'm looking down. For down home. Okay. All right. Number two. Here we go. Well, well, well. If it isn't the consequences of my own actions. Colin?
Is that the chickens have come home to roost?
The chickens have come home to roost. The chickens are coming home to roost. Consequences of your actions are being visited on you.
Okay. But in a bad way.
But in a bad way, definitely in a bad way. You've done something bad, and now it's coming. Yep. Okay, number three. Feel free to behave as if you lived here. Dana.
Make yourself at home?
Make yourself at home. Number four. Make a point extremely clear so there is no question about it. Colin?
Oh.
Drive the point home?
Drive the point home or hammer it home. Yep. I'm past all the obstacles and I'm in a secure position to succeed. Oh. Karen.
No, I was going to say something about home free.
That's it. Home free. Yep. You got it. I believe that comes from like having baseball? Rounded third base. The ball's nowhere near you. Yeah. Home free. Okay. All night long. For an extended period. No end in sight. Colin.
Until the cows come home.
Until the cows come home. Yes. Okay. Unimpressive.
Unimpressive.
Didn't make a big impression on me.
Colin. It was nothing to write home about.
Write
home about.
I'm going to end my participation in this in a way that prevents you from continuing on with it as well.
That sounds mean.
Dana?
I'll take my ball home with me. Or yeah.
Yes, I'm going to take my ball and go home. If we say somebody took their football and went home or something like that, it means nobody else gets to play. They didn't like how they were being treated, so it was their ball. That's right. They took it and went home, and now
game
nobody gets to play.
Game over, everybody.
Game over. Yeah. All right. A couple more. Fully deplete someone else's resources.
Huh.
Dana.
You eat them out of house and home.
You eat them out of house and home if you fully deplete someone else's resources. Yep. Okay. That person does not seem like they're getting it. I don't think they're picking up on what's going on.
My dad likes the expression, the lights are on, but nobody's home.
The lights are on, but nobody's home.
That's so mean.
Lights are on, but nobody's
home.
It's
so mean.
It was like, also the elevator doesn't reach the top floor. That was the
other one. That's a good one.
Yeah. And finally, what's past is past.
What's past? No. See, it's water under the home.
A lot of insurance doesn't cover that, so you should be aware. In California.
What's past is past.
What's past is past, and if you were to try to revisit it, it would not work out well for you.
Oh, okay.
Dana.
You can never go home again.
You can never go home again. Yep. On that cheery thought, I will end this quiz. All right. Well, good job, everybody. You got everything eventually.
Cool.
So great
job. Was torture.
Good job.
My gosh. Can I go next? Because I think you're going to like this one.
Okay. Yeah. I can participate.
Get Karen back into the show.
Yeah. When you said home, immediately my mind started like spitting out addresses of famous shows or characters, like where characters live. I was like, I'm just going to make that be the quiz. I'm going to give you the address. Right. And then you buzz in and you tell me what show or film or book is set at that place. Bonus point if you can name somebody who lives there.
Okay.
That address. And so kind of as a point of clarification with it, these addresses are where the internet says this work of art takes place. Like I've checked them as much as I could. And sometimes different authors will have slightly different addresses, yeah, but this is for sure an address. And another thing, sometimes the internet's like, you can see this building at this address, but that's not the address from the show. That's just the real life address.
Sure.
I'm going to ask about the address from the show, not the real life location of that building. So we'll kick it off with a classic. Who lives at 221B Baker Street, London, UK?
Ooh, we got city and country.
Mm. Karen.
That is Sherlock Holmes.
How about apartment 5A, 129 West 81st Street, New York, New York? I think that was
me.
Karen.
I know Karen knows it, but I buzz too.
I initially was going to say Friends, but now because of your clue, I feel like it's Seinfeld.
It is Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. Who lives there?
Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes, that's Jerry Seinfeld's address on Seinfeld. How about 124 Conch Street, Bikini Bottom, Pacific Ocean? Colin?
SpongeBob SquarePants.
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Mr. SquarePants.
He's the last name. That's yes. Right.
How about number 4 Privet Drive, Little Winging, Surrey, UK. Karen, I think I heard.
Oh, yes. From the Harry Potter universe. And Harry Potter lives there with the Dursleys.
That's right. Petunia, Vernon, Dudley also live there. All right. How about 805 St. Cloud Road, Bel Air, California? Chris.
The Banks family, the Carlton Banks is one of the people who lives there. Also, yes. Ashley Banks, Uncle Philip Banks.
Jeffrey
might live there. Does he live there?
Oh, yeah. Does Jeffrey live there? In.
Okay. It's the Fresh Prince of Bel Air. Is Will Smith's character on that show named Will Smith? I think it is, right? Yes.
Yeah. But William and not Willard.
Yeah. Really? Okay. Interesting. Okay. That's how they legally get around
it. Thinly veiled.
So that's one of the ones where the house is not actually in Bel Air. It's in a different part of LA.
Like the exterior shot of the house.
Yes, but on the show, the address is there. Okay. How about 84 Rainy Street, Arlen, Texas? Oh. Colin.
Would that be the Hill residence? Hank, Peggy, Bobby, Ladybird.
That's right.
What's the show?
From King of the Hill, of course.
How about 31 Spooner Street, Quahog, Rhode Island? I think I heard a rooster first.
It was the Griffins from Family Guy, Peter Griffin.
How about this one? 1313 Mockingbird Lane, Mockingbird Heights. Colin.
That is the Munster family from the Munsters, I believe.
Yes.
Wow.
Do you know any of their names?
Oh, sure. Well, there's Herman Munster. There's Lily Munster.
Wow.
There's Cousin Marilyn. There's Grandpa Munster. I guess that's his name, Grandpa.
Yeah, great job.
Wow, you really know your Munsters.
I watched a lot of Munsters when I was a kid.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, this one is a little bit tricky. They've had different addresses on the show, but I really wanted to include it.
Okay.
And this is from their biggest fan site, says that this is their address. That's my disclaimer. Okay. 1882 Gerard Street, San Francisco, California. Karen.
Full House.
Full House.
Good guess.
Who lived there?
Uncle.
Who didn't live there?
Right. Jesse?
That's right.
Is that a guy? The twins. I don't even know their last name.
They weren't twins. His kids were the twins.
Oh, yeah, they're not twins. They're not twins on the show.
No. I was going to say there are no twins, but he had twins on the show.
He did.
Oh.
Uncle Jim.
He did, and they lived there.
The Tanner family lived there.
Tanner. That's what it was. The Kostopoulos Tanner family. Okay.
And also Uncle Joey Gladstone lived there.
Joey Gladstone. Wow.
And the beaver puppet lived there.
Yeah. So this one's tricky because the house from the intro of it is actually at 1709 Broderick Street in San Francisco. So there's tours to see the Full House house, but that wasn't the address that they had on the show.
Right.
All right. How about 308 Negra Arroyo Lane, Albuquerque, New Mexico? Colin.
The White residents, Walter White and Skyler White and Walt Jr. from Breaking Bad.
Yes, it is. 1630 Ravello Drive, Sunnydale, California. Karen.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes.
Wow.
And Buffy lives there.
Yes, Buffy Summers lives there.
Oh, Summers. Yes. Yeah.
227 Lexington Place, Washington, D.C.
Oh.
Chris.
I believe the show is called 227.
Yeah. Can you name any characters?
Man. Was Jack A on that show?
Yeah, Colin said it. What? Colin said it. Mary.
Oh, yes. Yeah. There you go.
Regina King, was she on that show?
You know, I think she was.
Was she the teenage daughter or the adolescent daughter?
I think so, because when I started seeing Regina King again, I was like, she was on that show I watched a lot when I was a little kid. Yeah, just a few more. Here we go. How about 495 Grove Street, apartment 20, New York, New York. Karen.
This is Friends.
Yeah.
Who lives there? At some point, everybody except for Ross lived there, but it's you credit it as a Monica's grandma's apartment.
Yes, that's right. Although right before we recorded, I found an article that was like, turns out Ross lived there for a summer before he went to college for dance. With his grandpa, so all six of them have lived there.
Canon.
Okay. Yeah,
canon. Okay. The prequel.
How about 1407 Gray Malkin Lane, Salem Center, New York? Colin.
That is Professor Charles Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters from the X-Men universe.
Yes. Can you name anybody who lived there?
I'll say Charles Xavier, I believe, lived there.
I'll take it.
Jean Grey.
Scott Wolverine, Scott Summers. Yep,
Jubilee.
Yep. Okay, this next one's technically not a show or a movie or anything, but I really like this one, this is my last one. I'm leaving. 1313 Webfoot Walk, Duckburg, Calisota. Karen.
DuckTales, woo! Scrooge McDuck?
No.
He lives in Duckburg.
There are a lot of people who live in Duckburg, turns out. But that address, but not there. That's a two working class for Scrooge McDuck.
Oh, working class.
Or it's two.
Does Donald live there?
It's not a mansion there. That's one of Donald Duck's addresses.
Mm-hmm. One of his many.
He lives somewhere else in Duckburg as well, but that's one of the main ones.
Huh. Was working class for Scrooge.
I think if you look, you will find the number 1313 a lot as a reference to the Munsters, because that 1313 Mockingbird Lane is so iconic and well known.
Like a classic.
Yeah, because that's one of the only ones where the street address comes up a lot in the,
yeah,
in the
I show. Do feel like it came up a lot in the context of the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
They really want to just drive that point home, if you will, Chris. Mm-hmm.
Yes. All right. Good job, y'all.
So I have a segment, but be prepared. I have a lot of context and story about how I got to my segment. So please bear with me. It's kind of a behind the scenes look at my brain and how I prepare for the show. So hopefully you'll find this journey interesting or maybe frustrating. We don't know. So me and my partner, we play, you know, the game Heads Up. It's on your phone. It's almost like you have a mystery word like on a card up against your head and you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
One of our favorite topics, you can choose different categories, is called movie buffs. And so one day we were playing it and a movie, one of the movies that came up was called Oblivion, a Tom Cruise sci-fi movie, which prompted me to read Tom Cruise's whole filmography. And I went into a cruise hole. And then I came across the movie Cocktail. I don't know if you guys remember Cocktail.
Of course. Legendary soundtrack as well. Yeah.
Yes. Kokomo by the Beach Boys was the single that came out of that movie for the soundtrack. Man, I used to love Kokomo as a kid because you get to like sing out like a string of place names and it's really fun. Chorus starts with Bermuda, Bahama. Then that prompted me being like, hey, you know, I actually don't know a lot about Bermuda other than the fact that it's in Kokomo and like the Bermuda Triangle. I don't really know much about the country. So I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll read about the country. So I went to learn a little bit more about Bermuda, and I found something really, 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 really interesting about the houses there. And I was like, oh my God, when we set up this topic for this episode, I was like, this is my segment. It's so cool. So I actually prepared a whole segment, and I kid you not, what time is it? It's almost 3. As of 5 hours ago, this morning, my friend texted me a link to an article that was published today on Lad Bible, you know, the kind of like the social news, interesting fact site. And my friend texted me this and was like, hey, this might be interesting on Good Job Brain. And the article title is Why Every House in Bermuda Has a White Roof. It is literally my segment. I cannot believe it. It happened this morning. Makes me think I'm in Inception or something. It's so strange that like someone on a different part of the world ended up learning about this fact too, and then wrote about it on the same day. And Lad Bible is pretty big and pretty pervasive with their cool facts and stuff. And I was like, oh man, I don't want to risk duping trivia information, or do I find a new segment? And so I do have a new segment. Sorry, all of that context.
You're not doing it. Here's just information about the segment I'm not doing. So you guys just go to Bermuda.
You'll figure it out.
You should read up on it. Look at Lad Bible,
I'm just scared someone's going to be like, oh, you copied that, or like, you know, it's a Bader Meinhof. No. It's just we independently came up with this or came across
I like seeing your thought process. Yeah. It adds up to me.
Yeah. Two people invented the remote control garage door opener in 1931. So, yeah, two people. People can find the same thing interesting.
You should read it on Lad Bible. It's also on Atlas Obscura and on BBC as well. TLDR, the roofs are white and they're shaped like stairs, like steps. And it's because there's no fresh water. Even though they're surrounded by ocean, there's no fresh water. So this type of roof helps them collect rain.
Oh, it's very pretty. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's very cool.
So now my actual segment, I don't know, Chris, Dana, that you guys know this, but like I pass by Colin's house every day, at least once a day, sometimes twice, not because I'm like a creepy stalker or anything. Yeah. Colin lives close to our daycare. So we drive by his house like all the time. This past week, Thursday to be exact, we passed by Colin's house yet again. And I saw that they had this big green compost bag on their doorstep. And now let me tell you, I saw that and I immediately knew what it was for, because I also leave out a big green compost bag on my doorstep every Thursday. Turns out Colin and I use the same diaper service, the same compostable diaper service. Anyway, so that serves as the inspiration for this segment. It's real. It happened. And I want to introduce you to a man called Victor Mills. He's a chemical engineer who worked at Procter & Gamble for 35 years since the 1920s. And this is when Procter & Gamble, now a big giant in health industry and consumer goods. Back then, they were making like soaps and candles. And he was actually one of the first chemical engineers to work there. His task was to perfect the process of making ivory soap. So we all know ivory soap. Back then, making soap was a batch process. They have a big vat of soap and then they have to pour it out batch by batch. And it was really labor intensive. It was really time intensive. And so Victor Mills invented a way so that they can keep adding new soap mixture and they can keep pumping out the soap mixture to make a continuous amount of soap. It totally made production more efficient. And after perfecting the ivory soap production, Victor Mills then moved on to the next challenge. And it was how to stop peanut butter from separating. So now he worked on ivory soap. Now his job was to be like
the great problems of our time.
Yes. I mean, it's funny because now we're like, ooh, oil separation, that means it's natural and that means it's like artisanal. Back then they're like, we don't want any separation.
Yeah, how can we stop this? How can we stop nature?
And he had an emulsifying process in using different types of oils so that it's not just peanut oil and the peanut matter. And so what came out of it was Jif. Choosy moms choose Jif. Then his next challenge was Duncan Hines cake mix. It was the worst selling cake mix at the time. It clumped. People complained about it all the time. And Victor Mills was like, hey, let's run this through basically it's like a big drum polishing machine to break the clumps down. And they churned it out and it was finer. And Dunkin' Mix became number one from the worst cake mix that people complained about to number one.
He's like, what else you got? He's like, I'm your fixer.
You got it. Yeah, I'm going to squish it for you.
Yeah.
The next thing that he squished, well, we got a problem with potato chips, you know, because bags of potato chips, they're filled with air. They're so voluminous. The chips are never in a regular shape, you know, when you make it from real potatoes. Mm-hmm. So let's make a chip that, you know, is the same size that can be put together in a very efficient way. He helped out with Pringles.
You know, let's you said squish he potatoes. Squished potato chips. I was like, it's Pringles. It's yeah. Pringles.
Someone did invent the shape. He helped invent the process of, or I mean, he introduced the process of making the potato into slurry or potato yeah. flake. Fun fact, they were not allowed to be called chips yeah. back then.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not,
allowed to be called chips now. Yeah. They're not allowed to be called chips today.
I thought that was just back then.
No, if you buy a can of Pringles today, it does not say potato crisps. Chips. They're a crisp.
All right, Victor Mills, like, what else you got? What else you got? What else you got? Well, Procter & Gamble's like, hey, we just bought a paper pulp plant.
Like, great.
Which I believe became Charmin or was Charmin. And
they're like, just okay, they're just trying to throw problems at him now. They're like, yeah, all right, yeah. Okay.
Wonder Kid. As the legend goes, he was changing the diapers of his grandkids and he hated it. And back then it was all cloth diapers. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, wouldn't be cool if we mixed this paper plant pulp? Mm-hmm. And he invented Pampers.
Amazing.
He is the father of disposable diaper.
It's all the same stuff. Ivory soap, Jif, Pringles, yep, Duncan Hines cake mix.
And then extrude it, just squirt it right out.
Blend it all up, stuff it all in a diaper, and you're good to go.
They're not allowed to call them diapers. They're diaper-shaped crisps. So
Victor Mills contributed to so much of our household activities. So we salute you, sir. He lived to 100.
Mm. Amazing. Mm. Yeah. Amazing.
I love it. I feel like he saw the Matrix. He's like, you know what puzzles I can solve? This one's about blending and squishing stuff.
Anyways, so that's my big long story of how I got to this segment.
Wow, yeah.
From Tom Cruise to here.
Wait, how did you get from Bermuda to this guy?
Well, I had to change my, I had to pivot because I didn't want to do my Bermuda segment anymore. And I thought about passing by Colin's house and seeing his diaper.
And that's where a good job brain segment comes from, everybody. Full stream of consciousness, just jumping from thing to thing until you land on something. You drive by Colin's house and see a big bag full of baby poop, and it just gives you the inspiration.
All right. Thank you guys for bearing with me. That was
I liked it.
Okay, well, we are nearing the end of this episode, which means we are nearing the end of the season finale of season two of Good Job Brain. Well, what does that mean? That does not mean that we here at Good Job Brain are going to blast ourselves off into the sun and never come back. We hope what this means is we're going to take a little bit of time, recharge the old batteries, think about what we want to do for season three. And then, you know, keep an eye on the Good Job Brain Twitter, the Good Job Brain Facebook, or the Good Job Brain website. And we'll let you know when we're ready to start producing episodes in season three again. But what this does mean is, you know, no new episode next week or the week after that. We're just setting expectations. And then when season three happens again, it will be when we know that we've got a nice core group of 10 episodes ready to kind of go out in a weekly progression for you. So you get a nice batch of content.
This was our first try at a season structure and a new way of recording podcasts, you know, using tech we've never tried before. So due to social distancing and such. And even though this is our last episode of the season, we're already working on exciting experimental stuff for next season, probably happening in the fall. We'll have maybe some bonus content until then here and there. Feel free to let us know how you liked or hated this past 10 episode season. Let us know.
I'm excited for what we're planning when we kick it back off. Like, we have some really exciting, fun things planned.
All right, folks. Well, anyway, we know that this is sort of a bittersweet moment. You know, there's, you're feeling a lot of feelings right now. You know, you're happy that we came back. You're sad that we're leaving again. We just wanted to leave you off here with something that maybe sums everything up for us. Mr. James Taylor, friend of the show. He's going to take it from here.
Just yesterday morning, they posted more good job brain. I kind of figured they were at the end. We celebrated and we popped some champagne. But now they're taking another break again. I've seen fire and I've seen rain. Seen Karen win a bunch of money on the chase. I've seen cameos by Didi Khan from Greece. And I'll probably see more Good Job Brains.